Welcome to this week's edition of In the Clubhouse with EMB Baseball. I'm Andy Kirikides, joined by my wonderful and handsome co-host, Keith Glasser. How are we doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. We are going to chop it up for a few minutes about practicing with a purpose. This stems from an Instagram clip of Gilbert Arenas, of all people. For those of you who don't know, he was a pretty electric offensive player in the NBA for a while. Arizona Wildcat, great. But he was doing an interview. I don't know what podcast he was on, but he's doing an interview and he was talking about how when he was with, I believe he was with the Warriors, and he's getting shots up, just taking jump shots, getting his reps in. And Chris Mullin, one of the all-time greats, St. John's, left-handed shooter, former Golden State Warrior himself, comes in the gym and kind of said to him, man, like, it's good that you're in here, but those shots aren't getting you any better. And what he was driving at is you can take all those jump shots and you can do all those reps and, it's better than not doing anything, but you need to get game reps. You need to do things that are going to simulate game time. So coming off of screens, catching one dribble, that kind of stuff. And it made me think about a lot of the drill work that gets done these days. And I'm an infield guy, for those of you who've listened. And one of the things that I think we're guilty of as infield coaches at times is that we give kids a lot of drills to do, but the drills are all feel good stuff. And when that is the core of what you focus on, you're not really helping yourself get better at some of the game time stuff. So just want to take a couple minutes to kind of unpack that thought and nail down some things that I think are really important, specifically when we're getting into the off season here, is that, yeah, you need to do your hands work. You need to do your short hop stuff. You need to do your tee work when you're hitting. But if that's the bulk of the work you're doing, you're not really preparing yourself for the game and you're not really getting yourself ready to go and compete. And you need to be able to put yourself in an environment or through a series of work sessions where you're doing game-like stuff. You're moving fast. You're challenging yourself with velocity. You're challenging yourself with breaking balls. And every time you pick up a bat or every time you pick up a glove, you're not going in there just to feel good about yourself. You're going in there to actually get better. And I think for high school guys who are going through this offseason, you need to really think about what you're doing and how you're going about your business. Because if you spend the whole offseason trying to get good at drills, you're just going to get good at drills. You're not really going to get good at being a defender. You're not really going to get good as a hitter. And I think it's really important. We just had Jimmy Raisinger, who's the assistant coach of West Virginia, who's an infield guy, and he talked about the importance of being really good at playing catch, something as simple as that. And I don't think a lot of guys take that approach to how they go through their business in the offseason. And you really need to put yourself in a position where you're challenging yourself. You're working at game speed. You're getting live ground balls. You're throwing from multiple angles. You're trying to speed yourself up. You're trying to do things that are difficult. Same thing offensively. Crank the machine up. Don't make it a comfortable velocity. See some breaking balls. Do some stuff that's going to really challenge you. Be okay with failing in that moment. But if you don't do that and it's all about feeling good, you'll feel good in the moment, but game time, you might put up some 0-for-5s because you didn't want to push it in the offseason. And obviously that's not the result that we're really looking for. So I'll get off my soapbox there because I know you got some things you want to add to this one.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this on our shorts before, but I think it's important, especially in the off season and lead ups for baseball, because it is something that this is a game that is hard to replicate in game stuff in the cages or facilities, gym, whatever it might be. But there's a lot of truth to what he said in that interview where, you know, Chris Mullin challenged him to do, like, take the ball up the court and do the same thing he was just doing, and he couldn't make a shot. And, you know, I think he essentially said something to the effect of, like, I had an aha moment where, like, I got why some guys really struggle at this and why I was. And there's a lot of truth to that, you know, and you can apply it to really any sport, but especially in baseball, like, you can take as many fungos as you want, but if you're not taking live batted balls, and look, I know that it's hard to do inside, but you can certainly crank a machine up and let it spit ground balls at you and feel them at full speed. You know, and something we would always do, and I know you did this, like, you can field fungos, right? But you could also put yourself on a watch and field that ball and get it across the diamond in, you know, 3.9 seconds, let's just say, or 4 seconds flat, whatever it is. And you can challenge yourself in ways to where you're implicating or instituting the game speed that you're looking for, because you can put yourself on a watch and be like, okay, and I can't shuffle 4 times and get the ball across the diamond. It's a 4-3. That dude's safe. I can shuffle twice and get rid of it. That's a 4. You know, I'm getting it 3-9-4-0. I'm getting guys out. And there's a huge difference in that, just taking fungos or doing drill work. And there's a place for it. There is a place for doing drill work, but ultimately, you don't play a game of drill work. You play an actual game where it's live. There's a lot of conditions that are outside of your control. You're playing outside. You're playing on turf. You're playing on dirt. It's wet. It's not wet. It's cold. It's super humid. It's windy. It's not windy. It's a high sky. It's not. There's clouds. There's sun. There's so many other variables that go into it, and you need to be able to adapt to those things. And especially, you know, from a defensive side, and, you know, I think it's, you know, obviously for outfielders, it's the hardest, right? Like, it's hard if you live in the Northeast, Midwest, New England, it's hard to get outside in the winter and take fly balls. There are some things you can do, but, like, that's ultimately the hardest. Infield, you can gas things up and work on stuff. Catchers, you're catching bullpens, you're doing stuff. But, you know, when you're catching bullpens, work on your secondary stance with runners on base. Catch in that stance. Get comfortable doing it. Pretend like people are stealing and work your footwork and your exchanges. Block balls in bullpens. Not a lot of people want to do it, but do it because you get better at it. You know, I was a guy who really liked to pick and I could do it, but it's not for everybody and it's not something that you encourage as a coach unless you can do it. You know, if you want to be a guy who can pick, sit there and try to pick balls in bullpens. That's where you can fail and figure out, yeah, I can do this, or no, I can't. Because you can't just go into a game and decide that you're just going to pick baseballs. Like, you have to do it in situations. And I'm not saying do it all winter and then go do it in a game. Like, do it in inner squads. Do it in scrimmages where, like, you're not there's not an emphasis on winning. There's an emphasis on getting reps. You know, and from a hitting standpoint, you're dead right. Like, I shouldn't say everyone, but like the pitching machines nowadays are so much better than when you and I were young buckaroos coming up in this game. We just had the two-wheeled jugs with the yellow balls that just spit it out in the same exact spot every single time. And, like, it sucked. Like, now you can throw real baseballs. You got three-wheel machines. You got hack attacks. You got, ATAC has them. Everyone makes these three-wheeled machines they can spin fastballs, they can spin breaking balls, they can spin changeups, right-handed, left-handed. Like, you can get a real feel for a lot of that stuff. And there's variation in the pitches. Like, you know, my guys at RPI used to get mad because it's like, it's not – the ball moves. I'm like, yeah, man. Like, when we go play Union, you don't stand in the box and be like, hey, could you throw a fastball, four-seam fastball on the outer third right here, like mid-thigh high? If you throw it there, I can find some success. Like, no, they're trying to get you out. You need to be able to see the variation. And, you know, one of my favorite drills was the three-plate drill. Like, you jack that, you put the machine on the middle plate at, like, 85, 86, and then you move up to the front plate, and it's faster. You move to the back plate, it's slower, and it creates variation in the speeds, which is what you're going to see in game. And, you know, we would put the middle plate at, like, 88. And then move up to the front plate where it'd be like 92, move back to the back plate where it was going to be like 83. And those are all variations of fastballs that you're going to see throughout the course of the year. Like, let's go hit them, because that's what you're going to see the majority of the time. Sitting there and just taking regular BP all the time isn't going to get you better. It's not realistic. Is there a place for it? Yeah, when you're working on stuff and you want to do some things, absolutely. But you need to challenge yourself so that you can get yourself better and get yourself as game ready as you possibly can. You're not going to be game ready day one. You're not. It's just, it's a fallacy. It's going to take time to get in because you're not facing machine, you're facing live arms, and there's more going on there. But you can do a lot more, especially nowadays with the technology and the things that we have in order for guys to be able to get better and train. You can do a lot more that gets you a lot closer to being game ready than you ever were able to do previous to this time in history. So, you know, taking that time and legitimately trying to challenge yourself. And again, like, it's okay to fail. Like, this is a game of failure at its core, especially on the hitting side. Like, you could fail 6 out of 10 times and people are like, yo, that kid can flat out hit. Like, you're still getting out 6 times out of 10. I mean, it's a game of failure. You need to sometimes you have to make things harder in practice so that it's easier in the game. You can't just do everything easy to make yourself feel good and then get in the game and fail because you're not going to know how to make the adjustment. It's a game of failure. It's a game of adjustments. The faster you can make adjustments and figure out what they are so that you can find more success, the more success and the better off you're going to be in the long run. Because if you're just going to rely on taking BP from 40 feet, it's not going to get you prepped for what it is that you need to do. You need to hit at 60 feet, 6 inches. You need to hit velo. You need to hit breaking balls. It's not just a four-seam fastball game. There's two-seamers. There's sinkers. There's sliders. There's sweepers. There's changeups. Like, there's a lot of ways that pitchers can get you out, and you need to see those and train on those and hit those so that you can find as much success as you possibly can when you get into your actual season. Because that's what gets you recruited. The success on the field and the numbers that you can post doing that is what gets you recruited and ultimately gets you to the next level. Not how good your BP is, not how good your exit velo is off a tee on a stationary object. Like, as Billy said, we love it. We don't play in a carnival. Like, we play live actual baseball. Your success that you put out on the field is what ultimately gets you to the next level. So you need to work in a way that and train in a way that's going to get you the most success when you get on the field.
Hey, the environment's got to, you got to try to find a way to replicate the game environment the best you can. And sometimes you got to get creative with it. I mean, I'm a big fan of wall ball for kids.
Oh, like, God, I love wall ball.
Play,
gosh,
play
wall what, a, ball. What, a, what an unbelievable game that was.
Yeah, play is. Wall ball and try to catch it on the third hop every time. Work backhands, work run throughs. Like, yeah, it's not perfect, but you're putting yourself in an environment where things are a little bit different. Like, they got those little balls now that they're not perfectly round. So it takes like funky hops and stuff.
Like, yeah. We had those for those of you young bucks out there that have no idea what wall ball is, you find a wall and you play with your friends and you throw the ball off the wall. This is a very rudimentary game, but it's electric, and you get enough guys who want to compete at it. Like, if you misfield, if you make an error, like, you got to run and touch the wall. And if someone picks the ball up and throws it against the wall, like, you're out. Or they could also smoke you because you're not playing
tennis balls.
You play with a tennis ball.
It's with you're pegging people. Which,
yeah. If you're playing with a tennis ball, you can peg people.
It's a deterrent for failure.
You're not pegging people with a real live baseball. I mean, you can, but like, that's some psychopathic stuff. But like, you play with a softer ball. A tennis ball, if you will, because it softens your hands because you can't have hard hands if you're fielding with a tennis ball, and it's electric. You get some dudes who really want to compete. Like, it can be a lot of fun. Then you just play, you know, however many outs you want to get, and then you sit out and then you run it back. But they're like nipple balls. There's like nipples on the ball, and it like bounces all different ways. When we were in high school, we created John and I and some other guys. We created a game. We played there was like lines on the gym floor, right? It wasn't like the volleyball court, but there was like a bunch of lines like taped out, and we created like our own court. And like, it was like two, like you played like 2-on-2 or 3-on-3, and you just kept trying to like
get it past somebody because it just takes wild hops. And you just like, you play it on your knees and you just laid out trying to get everything. Like, it was awesome. But like, it's things like that, that like you just make up things that ultimately end up getting you better at some of this stuff. And like, there's two components to it. One, it makes you better at being a fielder. And two, like, there's a compete aspect to it. Like, you want to win. So like, you know, you're again, like, we're going to harp on this for as long as we do this podcast. Like, you're stepping into an uber competitive environment. Like, you need to want to compete, and it fosters that type of competition, and it's awesome. Like, I still have it. I used to tell my guys all the time, like, if I'm playing Scrabble against my grandmother, like, I'm looking to whoop her ass. Like, I'm not out here to lose. Like, I'm out here to win. And you know, I was
thesaurus research before you hit the Scrabble table to make sure they tuned up.
Like, my sister used to want to play me in Candyland. I used to just dominate, and like, she just stopped playing games with me. She just did, like, she couldn't handle it. I love my sister to death. Rachel, I love you to death. But like, I was out for blood, man. Didn't matter who it was.
But the compete thing is huge. Having fun with it's huge too, right? Like,
oh yeah.
I don't know. And like I said, I think there's a place for the drills. You know, you, specifically from an infield perspective, you see people put out cones and they put out ladders and they do their footwork. And it's like, all right, like, there's a place for that. But if that's all you're doing, you're not really getting better at playing defense. You're getting better at running to a cone. Like, we got to find a way to make that a part of your development and like part of your, we used to talk to them about their lead ups. So our guys had a lead up routine that they would do. And then we get into defense specific stuff where some days it was just straight fungo work. Some days it was relay work. And we would try to make that as game-like as we possibly could and getting them to play defense. Right. And that's a practice setting, but you can find that in the off season. Like, you can find somewhere that's got a machine that'll spit balls out real hard, and you can make it so you're doing all glove side stuff, or you're doing all backhand stuff, or you're going to set it really close to you so that the reaction timing for your hop reads and all that. Like, you need to be able to see a ball bounce. You need to be able to adjust the speeds. You need to get those kind of reps if you're going to be an infielder. And then, I mean, the lowest hanging fruit for offensive guys who are going to hit, there's all these pitching facilities. Like, go ask if you can stand in. You don't even need to swing. These dudes are throwing, like, some of these pitching facilities, like, they got dozens of guys throwing bullpens every day. I guarantee you, if you walked into that place and you're like, hey, would it be cool if I threw a helmet on and came in and just stood in for a bat like once or twice a week? They're not going to say no. And if they do, screw those guys. But that's the type of stuff. Like, you want to get better at seeing pitches, like, go stand in a batter's box.
Well, you have, I mean, the pitchers need to see hitters in the box too. So I agree. I think you'd be impressed to find people to say no, but I agree. Like, I think you're morphing into being out on drills. I'm not saying that as a bad thing.
Yeah. I think there's a place, but to your point, like,
but I think
you just
sit
there and bang balls off.
Yeah.
Ain't getting it done.
No, but I think that there's obviously a place for them. I think that what we're driving at is that it can't be the only thing it is that you do. And there's a place for them, especially at the younger age where like your footwork needs to improve, or you need to be better going backhand, or you need to be better going slow roller. Like, very rarely are you going to, like, do you have to get better if we're talking about playing at the next level of balls at you or glove side? Like, those are easy plays to make in my personal non-infield playing opinion. I played shortstop for 1 year, but like, my personal opinion, the ball at you and the ball glove side is relatively easy to get to. I think what separates everybody from being really good infielders is being able to go back in and slow roller. Like, those that your athleticism shows there. And I do think that there's, you know, like, I call them lead ups too, or your dry work, you know, dry work or lead ups, however, like, I use dry work, I use lead ups too, but we generally called it dry work, where, you know, like, we would throw, we'd stretch, dynamic warm up. We'd throw and get our arms loose. And then before we got into any infield specific play or outfield specific play, like there was a, we had a ton of drills because there's hundreds of them out there. And we would stick with, you know, five or six that day and say, okay, like we're going dry work here for the next 10 minutes just to get loose. And it was really like we used it more from a fundamental standpoint and also from a get loose standpoint before we went. So like we did some footwork stuff. We did work around a bucket or to a cone or whatever, but that like that was a 10-minute segment just to legitimately get us ready to go do our full-on infield play where we're taking fungos and we're taking machine-fed ground balls. And same thing with outfielders. There was a whole series we would go through before we got on. Like, you know, we had a hack attack like machine that would shoot fly balls everywhere. And, you know, we would like then we would get into, you know, working on balls in the gap and double cut, whatever it might be. But it was always something that we did. And I thought it was, you know, like, it was beneficial from the standpoint of like, maybe we're in a day where we're not even doing individual defense. We're going to play BP live and we're doing team defense where we're going to do cuts and relays and double cuts. Like we might not be doing a whole hell of a lot of defensive stuff from like a straight on ground ball standpoint, but here's 10 to 15 minutes where we can do some dry work to make sure we did some glove work and stuff to get ready so that when we do get into BP in 30 minutes, like we're ready to go. We don't have to do it that way. But I think ultimately you're driving at the point of like, it can't be the only thing that you do and you have to challenge yourself to be able to legitimately get better at infield play or whatever it is that you're doing that day. And I think that like, there's a lot out there where you just go do some ladder drill stuff and field a rolled ground ball at 5 miles an hour. Like that's not getting you ultimately any better. Like it's going to improve your footwork. It's going to improve your athleticism a little bit, but from a legit infield defensive standpoint, it's not making you the best that you could possibly be. If it's a small piece of variability. Yeah.
I think that's the big thing for me is that some of those drills, they're so controlled that there's no variability to them. And like, I see this, and you're obviously a catching guy, but I see it with catchers. It's like, and they're catching off of machines. It's like, okay, it's in the same freaking spot every time. Like I could sit back there on one knee and just catch the shit out of balls that I know they're going to be in a spot. That doesn't make you a good receiver. It's a good way to get loose. It's a good way to reinforce good movements. But if that's how you're you got to have some variability. Like the good receivers are the guys who that ball is supposed to be glove side and that dude misses a little bit and I can still handle it. Like variability with these kind of drills, I think is
yeah, but
where I've gotten lost with some of them.
I think you can create variability off a machine for catchers. Like it's, I agree
with like, with the new stuff for sure.
With the new stuff, I think that you can create some variability. Like you can set up for a ball. Like you can have that machine bearing in to go glove side, and then you can set up to where it's like, okay, we're going to set up away and work on balls that are missing glove side and beating that ball to the spot to make sure that we're not carrying that ball out of the zone. And, you know, you can manipulate the hack attacks enough to where like, all right, we're going to work on breaking balls down in the zone where like you have to work to, you know, however, whether you're going to get under that ball, you're going to turn that up, you're going to give with that into your body, whatever it is, like you can work on that stuff there. And I think like it creates more, it gives you more of an opportunity to work on that stuff because it's creating the feel. Is what it's creating, the feel of what it is that you need to do in order for you to be successful. Like ultimately you have to take that feel into a bullpen and catch a real live actual arm with a hitter and a swing and an umpire and all that stuff. Like it's all great. And I think, you know, you can create more variability, I think nowadays, but like it's a tool to create the feel it is that you need in order to be successful behind the dish. Like, you know, I wish we had this stuff growing up. Like we didn't have this stuff. Like, you know, we had the two-wheeled machine and you just, you know, we'd crank it up to like 85 because that's as high as it went. And then you just continually step forward to try to catch velo and see what would happen. And, you know, I don't necessarily know how safe that was looking back at it, but
you know, it was a fun little competition where you'd have to be like, how close can we get to this thing? Like, let's see what we can do here.
How close can we get?
But like, I still remember being in the McCann Center on like the back court, like all the way on the far end where there's like no lights and you're catching
ball coming out of the white background.
You're catching gray balls off a brown background. And it's like, all right, here we go. Let's see what we can do. And you're just like, oh gosh, this is, we're about to get worn out here. But, you know, it creates, you know, there's that competition aspect where you make it fun, you know, and you can't shy away from it. But, you know, I think that, you know, nowadays you can create a little bit more variability from a catching standpoint, but it's again, like it's a little bit more the feel aspect of like what it is that works for you, because ultimately, you know, not everyone catches the same. Like some guys really, like I was not a guy who could work under that low pitch. I couldn't do it. Like I was a dude who gave, like I brought that ball into my body. Like I would catch that and funnel that ball into my body and make that like present it a little bit higher than it actually was. But I needed to figure that out. Like if we had these machines, like I probably would have been able to figure that out, you know, a lot earlier than, you know, my freshman year of college. But, you know, but you can work, like you can work your footwork off of it. Like you can work those things that you can't necessarily do. Like you can work that ball that you got to rake in glove side and bring it, you know, bring that ball in and keep your feet moving and do all those things off machines nowadays that, you know, was a little bit more difficult back in the day. So I think it makes it a little bit easier from a development standpoint.
So what we're getting at is challenge yourself this offseason. Don't do a bunch of drills and make you feel comfortable. Try to find a way to get yourself in situations where you're working at game speed, where you're having to deal with the variables that are going to be introduced during the game. A bad hop spin, something that gets, you know, kind of undercut, side spin. Can you throw on the run? To your point about the catching, like, can you set it up to where you don't get the ball exactly where you think it's going to go? Can you work through which pitches can I pick? Which pitches do I have to block?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the variability on your throws down to second base. Like, don't set that thing up middle for your transfer work, because most of the time that's not we're going to be the pitches. Like, you got to work on that pitch that's up and arm side. You got to work that ball that gets a little bit down away from you, and you got to be able to rake that ball across and work on the things that actually translate to the game. Don't just do a bunch of stuff that makes you feel good about yourself.
Yeah. And I think especially from a catching standpoint, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know how many people listen to this, but I don't know how much heat I would catch for saying this, but I do believe this. Like I'm on record as despising the pop time at showcases, but like you can work your footwork and do all that stuff and get exponentially better at that in the off season, just finding a machine and doing that, you know. And ultimately at the end of the day, like you're going to go play college. If you go play college baseball and you're the starting catcher, like you're going to catch the back half of the bullpen for your starter, maybe the whole thing, depending on, you know, what it is that you do. Then you're going to go catch the entire 9-inning game where, you know, let's say it's 150 pitches just in game. That doesn't count the other, you know, 8 to start, then 5 in between. If there's pitching changes, you get 8, you caught the bullpen. Like, you know, you're pushing, you know, you're over 200 at that point in time. Like you might block 15 balls. Like you might throw once live in game. Like, yeah, you throw in down in between every inning, but like you can show it off in between inning and you're on the watch. Just know that in college, you're always on the watch. And then if the guy's a 1-2, like they might not even have an opportunity to steal. So if you're going to do something over 200 times, you're going to do another thing 15 times to 20, and you're going to do another thing once or twice, you should be really, really good at the thing you're going to do 200 times. That's what you need to be exceptional at. Being exceptional at throwing.
So you're telling me.
And not catching. Like the position, what you have to do is legitimately in your position name. Like it's.
Yeah. So you're telling me that catchers need to be good at catching things?
It's.
Is that what you're saying?
It is a wild concept, but like you're the catcher. You know, there's a guy who coached at Marist before we both got there. Actually, you might have played for him. who ended up coaching at Florida Southern afterwards. And then when I was coaching the Clark Griffith League, we had a bunch of players from Florida Southern, and we had a catcher who ended up making the Pro Bowl. I think he got as high as double A. He was a freshman. He was really good. And he was like, yo, all he told me all fall was like, I don't pay you to be a retriever. Your position is catcher. You got to catch the ball, not retrieve it. If I wanted a retriever, I'd get a golden retriever out here and put him behind the plate.
I had the pleasure of playing for that man.
But there's all the ridiculous things.
That was one that I had heard before.
Like, there is Sidoni, a lot.
You're a catcher, not a retriever.
Yes, exactly right. 1,000,000,000% correct. But like, it's, there's, of all the things I've heard, like, that there's a lot of truth in that statement of like, you're a catcher. You, like, if you're going to do it 200 plus times every game that you're going to go catch, you need to be really, really good at catching the baseball and focusing the majority of your attention on catching the ball and being really good at presenting strikes and doing those things will behoove you in your process, or, you know, if you aspire to play behind outside of high school baseball and beyond, like, you're going to get a lot of looks when you can handle yourself behind the plate and really be able to catch guys. And, you know, same thing we've said before, it's one of the fastest ways to be able to get yourself on the field when you get to college. And like, let's face it, I was as average could be as a Division I baseball player from an offensive standpoint, but I played a lot because I could catch. And like, I figured that out early of like, if I could get really good at this, I could, like, I'm going to find myself on the field more than I am right now. And, you know, like, that's why I played a lot. And that's ultimately what got me on the field. And eventually I played a decent amount, obviously, as I got older. But when I was younger, that's what got me on the field a lot quite faster, was being able to really receive and catch and throw. But, you know, the catch and throw part doesn't start with throwing. It's college coaches call it catch and throw. Like, you'll hear guys talk about it. Like, that kid can really catch and throw. Like, it's always catch and throw. It's not like, oh, he can really throw. Yeah, awesome. Great, he can throw. He can't catch the ball. Like, you can't throw anyone out if you can't catch it. Like, and on the flip side of that, like, you want that ball to be a strike as well. So if they're running and the pitcher threw a ball, like, you can't just completely block the umpire and not give him a look at the ball. You have to catch it, hope that he calls it a strike, and then get rid of that ball so that you can throw that guy out. And hopefully it's in a big spot and you can run off the field and, you know, look really cool doing it.
Flip the mask off.
Like, there's nothing better. We've digressed here, but there's nothing better as a catcher than sticking a ball in like a 2-2 count where a dude gets locked up in a big spot with two outs and runners on in like the seventh, and dude just locks up and you stick that ball and you know it's a strike before the umpire even bangs him, and you just catch that ball, flip it out, and you're just off the field. Like, there's nothing cooler than that as a catcher. Like, it is electric when you do that. Like, you stick it and you're like, yep, see ya. And like, that ball's out of your glove before that dude even rings him, and you're just off the field.
My favorite at shortstop was on the run ground ball with two outs, and you throw and just keep running into the dugout. That's a savvy move. I only got a chance to do that a couple times, but whatever. But I'll take
like
it.
Like when Trazer or Soups or George Heath would lock somebody up and like a 2-2 count, and you're just like, boom, yep, see ya.
Traz inside after throwing a bunch of changeups away, just throw that. He would throw that fastball that if you either took it for a strike or you fouled it off your kneecap.
There, Eric just throwing his Bugs Bunny changeup.
Yeah.
We were calling that game in front of full everyone. Could, if you paid attention, you knew what pitch was coming. I never gave signs.
Just guess changeup and you probably were going to get it right.
Yeah, but you couldn't hit it. That was the best part.
Eric had a good changeup. We don't need to boost his ego anymore. I probably listen to this. But
that breaking ball was no bueno.
Yeah. Spin was not a thing. Eric was very, very comfortable. I'm pretty sure he was allergic to it. But all right. Practice hard, do hard stuff. Don't make it easier on yourself if you want to get better this offseason. Message received. Anything else?
Nailed it.
All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. Tune in next week. Talk to you then. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMD Baseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on emdbaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.